People, it's supposed to say you are tuning in for the culture podcast. Let me take a minute before you smell my breath on the podcast.
I actually just looked up Wendy Day. She's a sounds like she's a music mogul. She's pretty. She's in the game since 1992. It says so. She knows what she's doing.
Bro, she did Cash Money's deal. She did Eminem's. I don't know if she did Eminem's deal, but she started the Rap Olympics. She did Master P's No Limit deal.
Culture. Back at it again as the Photo Culture Podcast. I go by the name Exotic Rosé, and today we have a special guest, Robbie Max. What's going on?
How we doing, man? I'm good. Thank God. How you doing?
I'm doing well. First off, I wanted to say RIP to a legend, DMX. Mm-hmm. It's crazy how you just passed away. Did he inspire you in music anyway or no?
Yeah, in a big way. You know, I didn't really do music until I was out of high school. So, you know, as an artist, it wasn't not that he didn't inspire me when I did start doing music, but I grew up on DMX, like as a consumer. And he was one of my favorite artists, unfortunately. It sucks, man. He was the truth. Like, I remember begging my mom to get me, and then there was X, the album. And I listened to it religiously. For months and months, like on repeat. And I was just so intrigued by, it was just like charisma, his energy. There was a lot that he brought to the table that is going to be missed heavily, you know, but inspired many that are doing it today. So it's a big loss.
I agree. Let's start from the beginning, since it's your first time here.
For sure.
Let's start from, where are you from?
I am from, I was born and raised in Westwood, New Jersey. Small little town. Good community though, grew up with a, you know, good family, great friends, played a lot of sports. I don't know if you want to continue asking questions, or if you want me to just carry on, cause I can talk. So it's up to you.
Nah, go ahead. Carry it on. I was about to ask you, like, how was it growing up? Like middle class, rich, like how was it?
No, middle class, but Westwood is a good town, like a solid town. You know, it's not like wealthy, but there's money there. But I'm technically, you know, my family, I didn't come up with like a ton of money. You know, I was blessed to be in Westwood for sure. I played sports, you know, I was a decorated athlete, wound up playing football in college. My upbringing was awesome. You know, when I look back at it, I was a happy kid, you know, loved life, very energetic. Had a lot of fun. Things were very simple for me, you know, and I was good at a lot of things. So things came very easy to me. There wasn't a lot of trials and tribulations. Like home life was, you know, we had our ups and downs as a family, the personal stuff, but you know, nothing to the point where it fazed me. You know, I almost thought it was regular. You know, I don't really know what everybody else was going through. All in all, very good upbringing, man. Very blessed. My parents did a really good job raising me with respect. You know, just had to be a decent human being. And again, you know, playing sports and being popular and all that kind of stuff growing up, it made things easier. So I had a fun childhood.
Okay, and you went to Westfield High School, played basketball, baseball, and football.
Yeah,
Westfield. So, oh, okay. So how was that? Like, did you get a scholarship? Like, how good were you? Cause I heard that you were playing QB as a football and you were pretty good.
Yeah, I was good. It's interesting. So I actually got more looks playing basketball as a basketball player. And I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah. I wound up playing football at Montclair State University. And, you know, truth be told, like I was a captain of the team. Right. And I'm a leader. Uh-huh. So I think I don't even think I realized, like I was always good and I was always skilled and I could throw the shit out of a football. You know, I can curse, right? You don't mind if I throw.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
So I could really throw a football, man. And we didn't throw the ball though. Like my senior year, and we won the state championship my senior year, but I threw the ball maybe like seven times a game.
We had a good running back then.
We had great running backs. We had a big line. We just, you know, ground and pound, dude. We beat teams up. Let's put it that way. We beat teams up. So it actually wasn't until I played in a Bergen County All-Star game. So I was selected to play in this game. And in the game, I went 15 of 18 for like 220 yards, two touchdowns. I got MVP of the game. And that's where people were like, what the hell? Like, I think they knew I could throw the ball, but nobody really got to see me do it to the level that I was capable of doing it at, you know? So the offensive coordinator at Montclair State happened to be at the game, and they pulled me off to the side. And he's like, listen, you got to play football. I don't know what you're thinking, trying to play basketball. You know what I mean? So, come play football. And I wound up going to Montclair. I sat out my freshman year, and I went into spring ball, had a really good spring ball. And I've had neck injuries, and my head wasn't in the right space. I wound up stopping into my sophomore year. That was pretty much the end of my real sports career. But yeah, man, I was good. I mean, I could throw the hell out of a football.
Do you know anybody that made it to baseball or like MLB, NFL, or NBA that you played with?
Yeah, so the most known out of Westwood is BJ Raji, who played for the Packers. He was the defensive lineman who, I don't know if you remember or not, but he intercepted it was against the Bears. I don't remember who the quarterback was, but he intercepted the I think it was like a dig across the middle or like a – I don't know what it was, but he jumped the route – and scored, and then he did the dance, and he was.
I think I remember that. Was that the same year that they won a Super Bowl?
The year they won a Super Bowl. So he was in the State Farm commercials with Aaron Rodgers doing the dances. Okay. So he went to Westwood, and I played ball. His brother as well, Corey, who was an unbelievable basketball player, and he went to Boston College. We also had Kevin Sampson, who played for the Chiefs. We had Ian Sample, who played. I don't think he made it to the NFL, but he played at Hawaii. Ramel Meekins was an amazing football player. He played at Rutgers and played a little bit. I think he a year with the Colts. Okay. Surprisingly, we were a small school, but something must be in the water, man, because we got some guys.
You guys got some legends coming out of New Jersey.
Yeah, we do. We do.
Okay. All right. And then your dad was a drummer. I didn't know that. And so is that where your passion for music came from?
Maybe like a little bit. Maybe it was influenced to a degree. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's in me by default. You know, he's a really good drummer. And he almost made it. Like before he had me, he had a nice little run with this band called The Ambulance. And they wound up breaking up and it didn't work out. But he played a decent, you know, role in that. I think I heard it all the time. There was always band practice, so I was enamored by it. But I think I had my own taste, you know, when it comes to music. And I was always, out of my friend group, the one who was really in tune with music. And, you know, I loved it, man. Like, I loved the lifestyle, the culture, from hip-hop to rock to everything. You know, I was a big Blink-182 fan growing up. And then as I got older, I really got into Eminem, DMX, Lil Wayne. I was a big Lil Wayne fan, especially in the mixtape days.
Who was it? Lil Wayne was killing it with the mixtape ages, man.
People don't know. If you know, you know. But you know, it's been a while now, so I don't think people, especially the youth, you know, they don't know how impactful that time was and what he was doing and how he shaped the culture that you see today. He really shaped the culture you see today, from the face tats to the diamond teeth to the, you know, the blunt smoking, and I mean, everything that you see, a lot of skinny jeans, the rock star lifestyle, all of it, to me, you know, he played maybe the biggest role in what you see today, you know, and then it translated into Young Thug and, you know, the guys that maybe the younger demographic would look at as the guy who started it. But it, Lil Wayne, man, he did it, man.
That's a legend.
That is a legend. That's one of my favorites of all time. And low key, maybe the best punchline artist there ever was. So
yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
So at what point did you start a group called Airplay? Like, when was that? Like, was that after you dropped out of college, or was that during college, or
the group started probably when I left college. But what happened was when I was in college, I never rapped, bro. I never did anything. Like, honestly, I never did anything. But I had wrote a rap in high school. And then one random night, this is a funny story, because I used to be a Black and Mild smoker. Mm-hmm. And I used to chant my Black and Milds, you know, chanting, like when you pull out the paper and stuff, right?
If you don't do that, then you ain't doing it right.
You ain't doing it right. So what's funny, though, is like, you know, I'm a white boy, you know, and late at night, there would be these ciphers, and they would see me champing a Black and Mild. And they'd be like, yo, like, you know, you're smoking a mild. And so I wound up mixing and mingling with a lot of, like, up-and-coming artists. I didn't even realize what, you know, that they were, but a lot of up-and-coming artists. And that kind of engulfed me in the urban community a little bit more than I was ever even, you know, used to. And one random night, I decided to rap. And it was the rap that I wrote in high school. And they were entertained by it. Everybody that was around was entertained by it. I probably did that rap 100 times in 3 months. Just, you know, it was all I had. And the second I started, you know, well, what else you got? You know, what else could you do? Because I was being pulled around to, yo, listen to the white boy. He got bars. You know what I mean? It was like that. Uh-huh. And I wound up writing. And I just got after it. And by the end of my freshman year of college, I had a folder like this, just bars, right? I mean, to everything, every instrumental you could imagine, just when, you know, I got after it. I created a MySpace page, put music up. And all of that, after about a year and a half, 2 years, got me over to the Booga Basement, which is a legendary studio. It's where the Fugees did the Score album. I came up under that family. I was introduced to my man, Keith, Mr. Wonder, who, you know, honestly, man, one of the most talented producers I've ever been around. Probably the most talented producer I've ever been around. And he mentored me, taught me a lot of what I know musically, you know, helped me understand music in a bigger way than just rapping, you know, how to really make music, especially coming up under that family, you know, the Fugees. It's legendary music. So I got in the throes of their situation. I was working with them for like a year, and then we created the group. And the group was myself, Wonder, and a girl, her name was Bianca. And we put out a little project. It was cool. And at the time, you know, not everybody was doing music the way, it wasn't as accessible as it is today. So, you know, I was very unique. And especially being a group with a white boy, you know, a black guy, a white girl, it was a unique dynamic. And we got a little bit of attention around the area. It fizzled out, though. The girl wound up doing her own thing. I stayed. And then that's where I eventually, you know, dove into doing my own solo thing.
Y'all all still keep in touch or no?
Yeah, me and Wonder are close, very close. And I haven't talked to Bianca in a minute, you know, through social media. You know, I guess we'll pop in, but it's been years at this point. But no, me and Wonder are very close. And a lot of the guys that I came up with at the studio were all still very close. They stay in touch, work together, you know. A lot of us are doing our own thing in many ways, but we, you know, we rock heavy.
All right. So you're still paying student loans. So what's your thoughts on school? Do you regret dropping out or?
Like, no.
No.
I do not regret dropping out. And it's all circumstantial. So, you know, I don't think I can speak for everybody, you know, but I can speak for myself. When I went to school, it was the thing you do. You know, you finish high school, you go, you pick your college, you pick your major, or you go undecided and then eventually figure it out. I think I was like, honestly making other people proud more than I was even making myself proud. It was kind of what I thought I just had to do. My 2 years at Montclair was a whirlwind, though. I was not focused. I was all over the place. You know, I wasn't a great student. I always tried working the system, you know. And eventually I realized that I was paying for something unnecessarily. And that's when I decided to drop out and chase music. I mean, music is what I had. Without there being like a, well, why are you not going to school anymore? That was the thing I had. And I ran with it. And it slowly but surely just kind of became what it became. And, you know, that's what happened. But no, I mean, it's all circumstantial. If you have it in your mind that you want to be something, and going to school teaches you that, and you learn and you're really there to learn and you have a plan and you understand, okay, I am going to have some sort of debt unless you have the finances to, you know, take care of it in the moment. But most of us take out loans, and unless you have it mapped out and you're firm in it, and it's hard at 18, 19 to have that. But if you do, go for it. You know, I think it's important. Education is super important. But I think education comes in many ways. I don't think it's isolated to a school or, you know, to a college. I've learned personally more from life and just mixing and mingling and networking and meeting people and my own trials and tribulations, personal research, you know, So again, it's circumstantial, but I made the right decision for sure.
I agree with you on that somewhat, because I'm still in school. I'm about to graduate, and I feel like I learned more doing it on my own than actual school. So I think the school system of how they educate people needs to change, unless you're going to school for like a doctor or a lawyer where you need to, like, certain things like that, because you need to. I'm not going to want somebody operating on me if they don't know what the hell they're doing, or representing me. They don't know. Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
So, yeah, so in that world, I think they need to change some things.
They definitely do. I mean, even the high school curriculums, like, these are dated curriculums. You know, it isn't, looking back, man, they should be preparing kids in general for life, man. Like, life, like, what's life? Why are we not being taught how to pay bills? Why are we not taught, you know, what a mortgage is? Why are we not told what taking out a college loan is and what that entails and the importance of understanding interest and, you know, principal and, you know, it's one of those things that if I had it my way, I would flip these school curriculums and, you know, what's the system in place upside down completely. I think there are the basics you need to, you know, learn and know. We should all know how to read and write. You know, we should all have an understanding, especially nowadays with technology, how to use computers. You know, they're the basics, and even some history. It's important to understand where a lot of this comes from, although that's too can be, you know.
Yeah, all over the place.
Yeah, man, because, you know, we're only taught what we're taught. There's a lot more history than what gets taught in school. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's important. I do believe that. And then, you know, I'm into, like, biology and understanding chemistry and how, you know, the world works. And there's little bits of that. But beyond that, man, we should be taught how to, when we hit 18, 19, how to be ready for it to a degree. And I don't think we are. I just don't. And I think even nowadays, it's even harder with the same system in place and, you know, these in our hands, especially when you're young, you know, it's confusing. It's confusing. And they think they know. These kids think they know. And a lot of them can figure some things out. But when it comes to life, it's deeper than that, you know?
I agree. Yeah. And I think they do like a class before you sign up for the loan. Well, I don't know if they do this anymore, but when I was at, my first year in college, when I took out a loan, they did a class, like a 1 day class, but I think it was like 2 hour, 3 hour class. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, after that, I don't see them doing that no more, where they show you what the loan means. And
I didn't even know there was a class.
Yeah. I was forced to take it, but nowadays I hear people take out loans and all they do is go online to their web portal and just click accept and that's it.
It's wild, man. It's a business. I mean, I don't want to get too in depth. I think, you know, I think if you think about it, anybody can understand what's going on. It's a business, you know, and it is one of the most lucrative businesses there is. Universities, colleges, it's big business. And I don't know if the education outweighs the business. And I think that's the disconnect, in my opinion, you know?
True. All right. So you played in a movie and you was playing an FBI agent. So how was that feeling being an acting role?
It was cool, man. I actually, I would like to do it more. It kind of fell into my lap. It was being directed by a buddy of mine, Ed Friday, and I had a few other, you know, my peers that were auditioning for it, and they just thought I'd be good. You know, I'm if anybody's seen my music videos and just how I am on social media and how I interact and do my motivational stuff, and, you know, I have a lot of energy and I'm good on camera. I've always been very comfortable. So it was just an opportunity that got thrown my way. So you should try this. And when I went there, it was like, yo, you'd be a great FBI agent. and I let's do it. You know what I mean? And I ran with it. And it was a really great experience. There were some awesome actors that were in it. You know, I didn't get to meet everybody because everybody shot on different days. But I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing it. It was something that I still to this day get hit up about. And I would love to do it more, man. I've taken more of an initiative to do more behind the scenes stuff. You know, we can get into all the stuff that I'm working on now when the time comes, but and I took a little bit of a step back from the look at me and wanted to shape some things business-wise and just learn a little bit more and financially become a little bit more stable. There was just a lot that I needed to get focused on in my head and everything. So one day maybe I'll get back into it, but it was a great experience, man.
Actually, since we're on that topic, I wanted to get into that. So you had a deal that was like a life, like 4 years ago, you had like a deal that was like life-changing on the table and it didn't go through. And then you stopped being an artist. Can you go into more details to like, what was the deal? Like,
yeah, for sure. So I had a record, a song called, Pretty Thing. And this song got some spin on the radio. And at the time I had a couple of videos that were playing on like MTV Jams. And, you know, there was we had some momentum. And, we dropped a remix to Pretty Thing in January of 2017, I want to say it was. And it hit, like people really gravitated to it. They really, really liked it. And at the time, from an artist perspective, like I'm not a DJ, I'm not a producer, I was an artist. To drop a record like this, you know, anybody can check it out. It's on Spotify. I might want to be redistributing it between me and you, but it's on Spotify because it's a good one. You know, and I want
to. You might as well.
Yeah. I have ideas, but it's a good record, and it started to gain attention. Like I already had a little bit of attention, and people were asking a lot about who and what I am because what people were most interested in was I'm a great performer. Like I'm a phenomenal performer and I love being on a stage, like same concept being on camera. So like that's really my bread and butter. They give me a mic and let me just kind of own a room. That's my thing. And when the song dropped, I had certain people that were reaching out to me that were already in the throes of, you know, conversation, just what we could do and, you know, whatever. And I wound up getting introduced to a woman and a guy who were starting a label, an independent label. And the consultant in their situation was Wendy Day. And Wendy Day is a monster in the music industry. Anybody can do their research on Wendy Day. She was a part of some of the biggest deals in hip hop history. And I felt like this was pretty much everything that I've been working for. You know, I had been through some things, you know, my personal life and musically that I had overcome. And thought that, you know, especially now that my head was right, that I was finally there and this was the moment. And what happened was, being that there was going to be a budget and a rebranding and a lot of, you know, conversation about how we were going to launch this and be the A artist, you know, was told that they asked me basically like months down the road. So I stopped everything I was doing for this situation. I stopped. And we had a thing going, me and my guys. And so by stopping, I mean, I stopped music, releasing music. I stopped music videos. I stopped everything to gear up for a, like, this is what I've been working on type thing. And what happened was months into it, they asked me if I could do certain styles of music that it's just not who I am. And I remember names specifically like Trippie Redd, you know, at the time X, you know, and they were asking me like, yo, could you do this? Could you do that? Now, realistically, I could. I can make a lot of different kinds of music and I had the capabilities of doing it, but it's just not who I am. You know what I mean? And I didn't want to go that route, especially at the time I was, 27 or 28? You know, I'm like, I wasn't a kid. I wasn't really trying to go that route. I wanted to have a professionalism about everything that I was doing and I wanted it to be a certain kind of focus. And that was what we were gearing up for. I mean, that was the conversation that everybody knew what I was and what I was trying to do. And everybody was on board. And that kind of created a little bit of a disconnect and like a friction. And about 2 months later, after the dialogue changed, just, you know, things happened, you know. And 2 months later, I got a call from Wendy while I was pulling into work, because at the time I was still working two jobs. And she told me, my wife needs to go. So she told me that, you know, listen, you know, I think it'd be best if everybody goes their separate ways. From what I understand from them, they're questioning things. And what I know about you, I don't think this is going to be the right situation for you. And at this time, they hadn't invested any money into me yet. And it was pretty heartbreaking, bro. Like, I'm not going to lie. I was really ready for this and I would have crushed. There's no doubt in my mind. Especially with the financial backing, you know, that's pretty much what I was working for. And I felt like an independent label, I could be a part of something where I could grow with them as opposed to a major coming in and kind of shaping everything that I wanted. I was really excited about it. And Wendy really held it down for me too. I mean, she said, I'm one of her favorite artists that she'd ever, talked to and people. I think it was more of like the people. I'm one of her favorite people that she'd ever worked with and talked to. And that was, I hold that dearly because she really is a savage in this game. And it hurt. I did two more shows. After the second show, I just didn't have it anymore. Like, I was tired. A lot of the industry is crazy, man. The music industry is wild. I've been thrown for so many loops and a lot of broken promises over the years and just ups and downs and people in and out of my life and all this stuff. And I just, like, I need a break. I really need a break. And I was emotional about it. And I told my guys, I had a bunch of guys that, were a part of our crew. And I told them, like, I need some time. And once I said that, and I took my time, it slowly just became, everybody kind of just did their own thing. And I'm still very close with, pretty much everybody in the crew, and we all still work together. Like, DJ Lil Bro, who I manage, he was my hype man at the time. My cousin Tommy, he's a sick artist, phenomenal embroidery, he's ridiculous. You need your hats done, you need gear done, he's the best. There's nobody better, so everybody kind of did their own thing. My man Dub is a phenomenal director, does movies and his own music, and my man Plan B's down in Atlanta, and he's a producer. Everybody kind of is doing their own thing now, but that's what separated a lot of what was happening and what we were doing. And then I left the music industry, bro. I just left. I wound up doing other business. Was working in the city for a cannabis incubator. And I kept writing. I've been writing. I wanted to figure out how I was going to, this is my love. It's my passion, music. I love it. But I wasn't going to run around like a chicken with his head cut off anymore. I wanted to get shit right. And I wanted to be focused, and I wanted to understand the layers of how it all works, so none of this stuff would happen again. And that's kind of what's gotten me to this point. It's been 4 years, which is insane.
I mean, this game, this music game, I'm not in the music game, but from everybody I interviewed and spoke to, it's pretty savage. It'll eat you, chew on you, and then spit you out. Like mm-hmm. You're like, all that time and energy you put into the game is like, it's just part of the game, I guess.
It is. It's part of the game, and business is business. And it's not even just the music industry. Like, the music industry is definitely cutthroat and tough, but like, business is business, and it's not anything to play with. And when you got people who understand business, they also know how to manipulate the business and how they can, take advantage of those that don't know the business. And I think it's just business. I don't think it's malicious and there's ill intent. There's no doubt, but it's business. It's on you to understand it. It's on you to learn how to have your conversations the right way and how to own those conversations and handle your business. If you get what you negotiate. And I think that that's one of the major things that I've learned over the last 10 years is that you get what you negotiate. I was so focused and so in love with being an artist that it crushed me because I was only thinking I'm going to get a deal. I'm going to get a deal. And that's what my goal was. And now, I just understand the layers of the business and the importance of ownership. And if you are going to do business with somebody I have an artist that signed to me, Nate Willett. And, I broke it down to him. I was like, listen, it is business. But if you want me to invest and you want me to handle certain things and do, we got to come to a common ground. And it's very simple. We're going to talk about it. We'll have lawyers talk about it. We'll figure it out. And then everybody holds themselves accountable, and it is what it is. But I want to give people, artists specifically, any creatives, an opportunity to work with somebody like myself and people that I work with and have transparent conversations and have real dialogue and be given an opportunity that they're comfortable with and not pull the wool over anybody's eyes. What is what is. what can be worked out is what can be worked out. And, you know, we move on from there. But it's a wild industry, dude.
Yeah, that's crazy. I actually just looked up Wendy Day. She's sounds like she's a music mogul. She's pretty. She's in the game since 1992. It says so. She knows what she's doing.
Bro, she did Cash Money's deal. She did Eminem's. I don't know if she did Eminem's deal, but she started the Rap Olympics. She did Master P's No Limit deal.
Oh wow.
You know, she's been a part of some of the biggest deals, if not the biggest deals in hip hop history. So when I did my research on it, and she took a liking to me, like I'll never forget. One of the coolest compliments I ever got, man, was when there was a dinner that we did out in the city. And, you know, it was me, the label, and Wendy. And the idea was that Wendy needed to get to know me to get a feel for if I was good, if I was the guy, you know? Mm-hmm. And the dinner was 5 hours, and about 2.5 hours in, I went to the bathroom and I came back and I guess they talked and Wendy looked at me and she said, listen, you know, I've been around a lot of artists and full transparency. I typically don't work with white rappers. I just don't. The only ones I've ever worked with was Eminem and Machine Gun Kelly. If I'm not mistaken, she might've gotten him out of his Bad Boy deal, but don't quote me on that. I did, but something along those lines where she helped Machine Gun Kelly get situated. And she said, you're going to be the third white rapper that I've ever worked with. And she goes, you're a home run, you know? And that was amazing to hear. And, you know, and especially from somebody from her caliber. And we still stay in touch to this day. You know, she's a friend of mine. I've turned to her for reasons, you know, questions that I've had about things. And, you know, I don't want to bother her. She costs, man. She's not cheap. You know, you want to go work with Wendy Day, it costs you a pretty penny, but it's worth every dollar. It really is. And one of the best things that came out of that situation was my friendship with Wendy. Just knowing that I can reach out to her and have a conversation, you know, it's really dope.
Dang. Wow. That's good that she gives back to you and everything like that.
Yeah, man. It's good. It's the way it should be, you know, and not everybody's like that, but she's a real one. She really is.
Okay. So I'm assuming the label BXXB is no longer no more, or is it still going on?
No, the label now is Destination Happiness, Destination Happiness Entertainment. It's a brand that I started about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. At the time I was doing, I wanted to release a music project. And it was basically going to be like 12 to 15 songs. And it was going to highlight a lot of my songwriting. You know, I had elevated my sound and I stepped away from just rapping on everything to making just bigger music that I felt was from a place, you know, and sonically elevated me. And the idea was I was going to put out a project. I don't even know why I thought a Destination Happens. I don't really remember where it came from. It's just, it happened. And I was like, that's it, man. Destination Happiness, because that's out of everything I've ever been through. That's the goal. You know, I want to be happy. I want to do this for all the right reasons. And I want for it to put a smile on my face. I want life to put a smile on my face. So that was it. I was going to put it out and I was going to let it be. And before I did that, I started a clothing brand. And from there it turned into, a management company. And then I have a partner now, my buddy Austin, who is amazing. He's a savage of a businessman and he's helped enhance the company. And, you know, now we're an entertainment company. We signed our first artist, Nate. I still manage DJ Lil Bruh, and we're slowly but surely, I have a few other artists that I'm looking into that we've had conversations about, and slowly but surely we're shaping this into something more, and I'm very excited about it. But yeah, man, we're going to do a lot of positive things, not only in the music industry, but in the community. And I want to push people towards happiness and being their best self. And that's my goal in life now.
I feel like something's happened in life for a reason. So everything you went through, maybe your what God had planned for you was to manage artists and get artists into the right position pretty much. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's absolutely that's, you know, spot on. When I met Nate, so I wasn't planning on working with any artists like that. Like I didn't really want to take that on. I actually wanted to figure out a way to release music again, be fully transparent and run a clothing company and just build this lifestyle that people would gravitate to because it's positive. It's something really positive and motivational. And it's outside of the hoopla of all pop culture. You know, we are pop culture. Don't get me wrong. Like, we got swag and we do our thing and we have fun, but I really want the base of our company to be about positivity and finding that peace within. So when I met Nate, it was just, I heard his voice, you know, this kid is a superstar. And I was writing this record called Wrong Side of the Bed, which at some point we'll probably release. But he came to the studio session. He reached out to me via Instagram first. I said, come to, you know, sessions. We're coincidentally from the same hometown. He had been following me for some time and was like, yo, I want to get into music. At the time, had done no music, you know, and just had a voice, and he knew it was his passion, but he didn't know how to go about it. And I heard his voice on record and I was blown away, especially when he's doing my song. So having, like, I'm not a singer, you know, like I can hold a note and I can as a recording artist, I can make things sound good. I know how to do it, but he can sing. So I heard his voice and it took me like 3 weeks to finish this record up. And I said, yo, you know what? Can you record it? Like, let me see you, like how you sound on this record. Do the whole thing. And he knocked it out the park. And then I started managing him just like that. I mean, I said, yo, I'm going to help you as best I can. We started making a lot of records. I started shopping some of the music around. We had some interest from some people. We still have some interest, but my idea, knowing the music industry and understanding how it all works, I didn't want to just give it him up. You know, I wanted to be a part of the entire thing and build a foundation and a brand and a company and an entertainment company more specifically, and have him be our first artist. So over the last, you know, 6 months, we've basically been figuring that out and we've been, you know, releasing music. His last song he released in February, but, we're going to drop something. Hopefully April 30th is what we're looking at, but it could be top of May. And then from that point, we have a lot that we're gearing up for the summer, and his project will come out end of the year. And I'm super excited, man. It's definitely become my purpose. I don't think I'm not going to not release music. I will release music. It's not where my head's at, you know, but down the road at some point, I definitely want to release some music. I just want it to be, I want it to all make sense. So for now, my goal is to help out anybody on the come up, you know, that needs help. You know, I consult, I have an entertainment company that if, you know, I like you enough, I'm willing to pull you in and have you be a part of it. But it's, again, it's all got to be understood and what it all is. And I'm excited. It's like a new chapter of my life, man.
Well, nowadays, you got the big labels. So artists being signed to an independent label and then also being signed to a big label too. So,
yep.
So you can work out deals like that too. So you'll be fine.
Well, no, the one thing I've learned is that these artists individually, you know, they sign as an individual, and I don't think big labels are bad. I think there's a misconception about all of that. You know, at the time, these artists need that. And, you know, for one, I said it earlier, you get what you negotiate. So unless you go in and you have your conversations and you understand the business of it, you know, you're probably just going to put your name on, you know, your name on the dotted line, and you're going to move forward because, you know, you might be getting in advance. You might be around people that, you know, you're excited about, and maybe they can enhance your stuff and your numbers start going and all this. But, you know, ownership of music matters, you know, and it is the thing that I think people are starting to harp on now more than ever. But
what the industry does is they give you such a good advance in the beginning, so it sounds good, but then long term wise, publishing is winning.
It matters tremendously, bro. It's everything. I mean, you know, like no artist is going to get invested in without giving up something. So you're usually going to give up your masters because the masters, it's controlled by the label that's funding it and releasing it. And that's not unfair. Like, if you really think about it, if you really break it down, you know, if I take a shot at you, right, and I think you're going to be a superstar, and I'm going to put a money behind you, I'm not just going to do it. I'm not just going to do it just to do it, you know. And then where does the company reap the benefits? So, of course, I have to own whether it be a piece or your master's. And if there's a way to work back your master's down the road because you're showing success and you're exceeding expectations, I'm all for that. Like, I'm the easiest person to talk to. You know what I mean? Everything to me is a conversation. It doesn't just because something's on a piece of paper and that's, you know, the initial whatever. It doesn't mean that in a year or two, if certain things are happening, that we can't come back and renegotiate. I'm all for that. But the initial what it is what it is. And what happens is these majors, they don't give you that option. They don't give you that option to, like, you know, at some point we can renegotiate, unless you are just out of this world. That you usually have to buy back your master's.
I was about to say that. You got to buy it back. Yeah, because when you break it down, like you said, it's a business.
Business.
And before a business invests into a tool or product or somebody, they want to know what's their ROI.
Absolutely.
So if you don't tell me how I'm going to get my ROI, then most likely they're not going to want to invest into you.
No, and if they do, then I'm going to say this is how I'm going to get my ROI, because I know we know as a company how we're going to get our ROI. That's how it is. And if that's the case, then there's not really much of an argument, because technically you are you know, in a position where you need the backing and you need the push, and maybe you don't know how to do what you're going to be doing. Where the younger demographic is really winning now, and just in maybe not even just the younger demographic, but just in general, is social media. They're figuring out how to gain followers. So they have the return on investment is based on that more than it is an actual dollar and how I'm going to make my money. It's that, okay, there's this platform that they have by default because there's X amount of people that are following them, and those people that are following them, there's money there. There just is, you know? So a lot of what they're, you know, people are doing is creating digital currency, technically, you know. And
I was about to say that. It's kind of like digital currency or asset.
It's an asset, 100%, bro. Like, so, you know, they have figured that out. A lot of these artists have figured out how. And I like, and you know, just a side note, I think that's why there's a lot of antics, a lot of extraness, you know, a lot of what can I do to get attention. That. You know, I understand why they're doing it. It might not be my thing. It might not be how I choose to operate, you know, but if a kid gets a tattoos all over his face and says, yo, I'm going to be an artist, I actually understand that that's going to pull attention. And maybe they have a plan in their mind that's going to get them followers with that. Now, I don't think everybody should just do it, because I think some people make a very poor decision, you know, and it doesn't really work out. And then you're stuck with whatever it is that you've done to yourself. So there's that. But I understand what the goal is. I understand how this TikTok game works. I understand how it works from a content and creative level, you know, and they have figured that out in many, many ways. And that's become their currency. That's become their leverage in any discussion or, you know, conversation regarding contracts or deals or whatever. But another thing that has done is it's created, and I don't want to take anybody's, because everybody's talented in their own right, but it's become more on the number that the followers than it has the talent, like the raw talent. You know, I think music has gotten into an interesting place, because, like I said, it's based a lot on who has eyes on them, as opposed to sonically, like, wow, like those timeless records that are forever are different for a reason. And I think they're a dime a dozen nowadays. You got a lot of people that are winning for other reasons, and it's cool. You know, I don't knock it, but you know, I'm a music guy. I'm a music head. I want the music. I want to listen to something and it hits my soul. You know, I feel
it. And you can connect to, relate to.
That's what I want. You know, and I know, but when you're 18, 19, you know, you relate to, I want to have fun. I want to enjoy myself. I want to get lit. I want to do this. So there is a connection, and I get it. Cause we're talking about Lil Wayne and Eminem and DMX, and well, they were wild, you know.
Yeah.
They did a lot of shit that we were interested in for reasons outside of the music. But back in the day, you could be talented and a label would take a shot at you differently. You know, they'd be like, oh no, he's a moneymaker, you know, or she's a moneymaker. They got this. You know, I see it. I get it. That's what I saw in Nate. That's what I see in Nate. You know, he has a voice and he has a look, and there's a thing about him that I was enamored by, bro. Like, I was excited about it because it kind of brought me back to what I think music is, with the root of it, you know? And so not to say that I wouldn't take on other artists that do it differently, but I just got to get to know you. I want to understand it. I want to know you. You have, you know what you want and you know what you're doing. And on top of that, you're a person, not just like a, you know, just trying to do it and make it attention. You know, I'm not into all of that. I watch it, but I'm not into all that.
I mean, nowadays you got the kids or people, they'll start off doing a funny video.
Yeah.
And they go viral off of that, do the video, but then transition slowly into music too.
It 100% works. Like that, the girl, Addison Rae, she's huge on TikTok, one of the biggest TikTokers there is. And she just dropped a song. You know, it's because what do you do when you have the following? You create things that are going to create more revenue. And the music industry is, you can make money in the music industry. You know, she's making more money in music than people that have been doing it for a long, long time. And it's not based on, the song's cool, but it's not based on, wow. It's based on, she's got an
ability. Yeah, they like her, the following. Yeah.
They like her. They're interested. They're, it's a whole new game. It's a very different game than when it was when I came up. You know, I came up in the 2009, 2010. You know, I came up when, I remember Instagram when it happened. You know what I mean? I was a part of all of that. So it's just a different game, and you have to adapt. You know, I'm not like stuck in my ways. I learn a lot from these kids. I really do. I learn a lot from the youth. I study where the game's at. I have to as an entertainment label owner, an entertainment company owner, even just culturally understanding how certain fashion should go, and launching my own clothing and stuff. I have to be in tune, So I love it in many ways, but I am who I am, and I have my thoughts on things and what I like for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure Nate's probably tell you a couple of things like, hey, I think we should try this, because he looks at it different from you because you're older.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. One thing that I know for sure is that everybody knows themselves better than the next person. Nobody knows you better than you know you. And that's a fact, no matter what. So I don't want to take you away from what you are. I think there are situations where, like, I'm not going to use Nate as an example, but like in general, there are situations where you see something in somebody and you understand the depth, and it maybe does come from a mature aspect. Because I've been through what I've been through, because I've seen it how I've seen it. And I know you're young, but let's think, this is where you could go if you did this. And I think that's just as important as your mindset and where you want, because mentorship in the music industry is like a lost art. And I know I do this. I do it for many artists. I help out a lot of guys just with advice, and they take my advice because I'm giving them the real and what's possible if you separate your complacency and your thoughts. There is something bigger, and maybe it pushes you to do something even more than what you have in your mind. But again, I mentor only because I get to know you. I don't just throw my ideas your way and that's the end of it. I get you, I hear you, I understand you. And then I say, okay, well, here, boom, this is what I think you should do. And then I help you in life, because I always want to make sure that with all the insanity that you're going to be dealing with, that you keep a level head and that you stay focused, because that's really what's going to wind up, as you get older, especially, going to take you there. And have you become differently, not just financially stable, but mentally stable,
Okay. All right. I did want to bring up this topic too. Do you still believe that there were ghosts in your parents' home back in the day?
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. When we moved in, it was a one floor ranch, and we built up on it. So there was it wound up being, two stories, but when we first moved in, we went downstairs in the basement of all these articles of, the couple that lived there before and their family and how they were in war. And it was it was wild. It was eerie. You know what I mean? And then through my ears there, we would, God bless you. Through my ears there, we would, hear footsteps, doors would open, things like that. But it was probably just the wind, with the window open. I'm not like a big believer in ghosts and all that. I do believe in spirits and auras, and I believe in that kind of stuff, but it's a like more of a thing that I latched onto when I was a kid than anything else, you know?
Yeah, I feel you. I remember when what was that movie called? I forgot the movie name. With the guy used to chase the person with the knife.
Which one? You talking about the Halloween?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. That wasn't the movie name. He Scream? Was like a white. Yeah, Scream.
Scream. Yeah.
I used to think sometimes he was in my room when I was a kid when I used to watch that.
Oh, yeah, dude. That scared everybody. That movie shook everybody.
Yeah, then my dad used to be like, don't worry about it. He's like, make me not scared and stuff like that. But that used to scare me when I was a kid.
Yeah, for sure. I think it scared everybody, bro. That mask was wild. And then everybody went as it for Halloween, so it didn't help.
Yeah, they need to make a new one now. Think about it. So you were also on Hot 97. You were performing with Machine Gun Kelly and Waka Flocka. Mm-hmm. How did that happen?
Hot 97 happened. DJ Drewski, was a friend of mine. He dropped Pretty Thing. So Pretty Thing is what spun on Hot 97. And he just put, you know, like I said, we were moving. We had a lot of momentum. There was interest, and he liked the record. And it spun every Sunday for, you know, a few months, which was really dope. Machine Gun Kelly happened because my man Mikey, who owns a Stronghold shop in Bloomfield, and Roselle as well. My man Duke, he got a show in Montclair with Machine Gun Kelly and pulled us in, was like, yo, you rock out with us, you know? So I wound up getting that gig, which was super dope. And that was early in my career, which was, the whole thing was an experience, but this was also early in Machine Gun Kelly's career, you know?
Okay.
And Waka Flocka was more towards the end of, you know, my run as an artist. We did this in Rhode Island. I think the place was Lupo's, and it was Waka Flocka and DJ Who Kid. And at that time I was, there was a promoter and artist named Spaka, and we had done a lot of shows with him, and we always sold tickets and, you know, brought people out, and, you know, he just would always give us the opportunities. And that show happened to be one of the opportunities, and it was a sick show. You can see it on YouTube. It was a lot of fun. YouTube Robbie Max Lupo's, I think Lupo's or Waka Flocka. You can watch some of the behind the scenes footage. Fatboy was involved. Fatboy opened up the show. I used to bring him around.
He's from Jersey too, right?
Yeah, he's from Jersey. So when he was popping off and we were doing shows at my shows, we would try to like mix and mingle and figure out how we could work together. And he would come and like host them, you know. He was a funny guy. He was also an artist. Like Fat is an artist, you know. Mm-hmm. So we built a relationship, and he would come out and he would, you know, host the shows and get everybody lit and get them going. And then we would come out and we would rock out, and we would do a song. But yeah, that was a sick show. It's one of my favorite shows. The Waka Flocka show was one of my favorite shows I ever did.
Okay.
For sure.
Do you know Jersey John?
Hell yeah. Of course.
That's my boy.
Oh yeah, man. It's funny. I've known him for a while, but we got to know each other through Clubhouse. So when Clubhouse started popping off in December, yeah, man, I got on Clubhouse in December, and we just started to build like a little relationship. And we had like this little group of, you know, of us artists and creatives that would, you know, communicate and have our own little Clubhouse thing, you know. Okay. And really good dude though, man. And he's a hustler. He gets after it. Good guy. Really good guy. I actually got to catch up with him because it's been like a month, 2 months since I've talked to him.
Yeah. So he reached out to me, wanted to do an interview, came down here. I showed him around town, Miami, came to support his event. I just plugged him in to people that I know and stuff like that.
So are you in Miami?
Well, I'm in Fort Lauderdale, but I know people in Miami. He wanted to go to Tampa. I know people in Tampa, so yeah.
My DJ's down there. I'll hit you up after this. My DJ's down there right now.
Okay.
Yeah, he DJ Lobra. He's sick. We're actually probably going to get down there at some point over the next few months. If I do, I'll definitely hit you up.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, man, I'd love to connect with whatever you got. He's there until Sunday. But if you guys have any, you know, if there's anything you guys want to link up or whatever, let's make something happen.
For real, for facts. I like that.
For sure.
Yeah, that's good. One thing that Jersey John said in the interview that I did with him was people in Jersey don't like to support each other.
I'm going to respectfully disagree. I understand what he's saying. I really understand what he's saying. But It's a rat race. It's a competition. So to a degree, you know, nobody's going to go out of their way. But I've gotten support from many artists, and I've supported many artists. So from my perspective, you know, I think that that's a situational thing. I think we all want to be accepted a certain way. We all want everybody to like us. And I think there are certain things you got to do to get to a point where you're just going to get it. And then you just also, on the flip side of it, have to find the right people. You know, I have a ton of people in Jersey who support what I do. And there's nothing but love from me to them, you know, but I do think, and vice versa, but I do think it's a competition. I do think Jersey is very competitive, and that's where I can understand where that comes from. That's not the first time I've heard that. A lot of people say that. I wish there was more camaraderie. I definitely wish there was more camaraderie. But you know, I don't know if Jersey has like a sound or a thing that everybody kind of just falls into. It's like a melting pot. So it's interesting how that all works. But man, I love Jersey. I love the Jersey artists. I support everybody. I want to see everybody win. You know, I'm not that guy. You know, I'll support, if you ask me to promote something, you know, as long as it fits, you know, to a degree fits what I'm trying to do, and it's not going to make me look wild. I will absolutely support and promote, you know what I mean? Or put you on to somebody that, you know, is good for you. But yeah, I get what he's saying. I don't all the way agree.
Okay. I mean, I think everybody feels like that, because you know what they say, your hometown don't really support you as much as some people that don't know you. The people that you don't know you support you more. If people say that down here in Miami too, in Florida.
Hey, listen, man, I think it's regular. I don't think I think we want it to be like Atlanta, or we want it to be, you know, I think Atlanta is the one place where there's real, like, you know, you got Atlanta's Atlanta, and those are the artists out of Atlanta. And maybe there's like Houston had it for a little bit of time, you know, where it was your Houston artist. New York has had some decent camaraderie, you know what I mean? Like the artists that pop off, they kind of mix and mingle. I just don't know if Jersey, you know, Jersey's had some pretty big artists that have popped off. Don't get me wrong.
Method Man.
What's that?
Method Man
for sure. But Method Man and them, they probably have more camaraderie than you see nowadays. You know what I mean? But I wouldn't say that we don't gel with each other. You know, I think we do. But I also think too, everybody's on a Jersey's Jersey, man. Everybody's on guard a little bit. You know, there's an attitude. There's a, you know, there's a thing. But I mean, it is what it is. What are you gonna do? Find the people that support you. Find the people that you can gel with. That's what's most important. It doesn't matter.
And keep pushing and believe in yourself. That's all I can say. Yeah.
Keep pushing, man. Keep good at it. Don't give people a reason to not like you. You know what I mean?
I agree. So one of your past interviews, I've seen that you said that you had a conversation with your girl before about you love looking at women because they're beautiful, but you're my baby. I did that conversation. Huh?
I said, where the hell did you get that? It is true, but that's my girl. Listen, I've been with my wife for 14 years. You know what I mean? She's been through everything.
Oh, that was the same girl. Same girl?
Same girl, man. Same girl.
Okay.
Same
congrats.
Girl. She's been, thank you. We got married a few years ago. So she's, you know, been through every bit of what I've been through with me. And I wasn't always there. You know, I had to grow up in many ways. I put it through a lot. But she's a ride or die, my best friend, you know, that's my baby. But as far as being a man, I'm a man, you know, I can look and say, oh, that's a beautiful girl. You know what I mean?
Robbie's like, let's be realistic. I'm a man.
Listen, I think it'd be unfair to say that girls don't do the same thing if they see a good looking guy or so. You know, I think deep down, everybody has that, like, oh, he's hot or she's hot or whatever, you know, that's regular. Come on. But no, like when you get a good one, you make sure you keep them. And I got a good one.
That's good. How did that conversation go with you? Because some people are like the girl don't want to hear all that. Like, oh, I don't want to hear all that. Or you like another girl.
She's cool with it. She's cool with it. She's right here. She's cool with it. She gets it, man. Like, we've been together for so long. You know, we have other things we have to worry about. It's not that. Like, I'm sure everybody has their own insecurities to a degree when it comes to relationships. And you know, when I go out or she goes out, it's like, oh, what could be? I mean, man, you build trust and you do what you can to not lose it. And even when you lose it, you learn to, you know, build it back, try to figure out ways to build it back and learn from your mistakes and whatever it is. And, you know, we complicate relationships. And I don't think they're as complicated as we make them out to be. They are by default complicated because of what comes with it, but we like, enhance that complication by just thinking too much.
Yeah, I feel like that's when people start getting to that tick and tack things like that, I feel like that's being childish. Like, we can be all grown about it. Let's be grown about it. And it sounds like you and your wife were grown about it. So that's good.
And listen, she is a good one. And I'm blessed. I'll leave it at that. You know, and maybe I didn't get it the way I get it as I've gotten older, you know, because I was young and I had my ways about me. And, you know, I made mistakes before, but I learned from all of that. And I'm beyond blessed to have her in my life.
It is what it is. It's the I'm not gonna say that. I don't know. Maybe it's the culture we were raised in, or
it wasn't like that. I wasn't running around as an artist being a savage. It wasn't, had nothing to do with the music industry. It's just like, I'm a young man. You know what I mean? I'm in college. There was things, you know what I mean? It's just what it is. And you know, at times we think we can get away with things and we can't. You know, most things come back around. You know what I mean? You're gonna feel it in some way, shape, or form. It's gonna come and hit you some way. So we're not getting into detail, you know what I mean? I had my moments and we learned from it. I learned from it specifically. I'm sure she didn't want to be with me at times, you know what I mean? But we love each other. We love each other to death. And that's how, you know, we've built a strong relationship, is through those trials and tribulations.
I agree. Hey, at least you guys are married. Congrats on that.
Oh, yeah. And that's my baby.
All right. Before we wrap it up, go ahead and tell me what's your goals and things that people should be on the lookout for.
My goal is to make Destination Happiness the biggest brand it can possibly be. You know, I want the world to embrace it. I want to give the world as much positivity as I possibly can, not just myself, but through what we do as a company. I want to make the world a better place. I want to help people in general, whether it be as a mentor in the music industry or just regular conversations, specifically the youth. I really want to help the youth. I want them to, have some sort of guidance, especially from outside of their, you know, parental guidance and teachers and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes it helps to hear it from somebody else. So if I can help in any way, shape, or form, hear them and help them move in a good direction, I want to do that. You know, I want Nate Willett to be the biggest artist that there is in the music industry. DJ Lil Bro, we're going to get him to be a radio DJ. Big goals. You know, I want to see my family happy. You know, I want to raise a good family. You know, I want to have kids. I want, I want a lot in this world. There's so much life left and I'm excited for it all. You know, I'm thankful to be here. I'm thankful to still be kicking, you know, under all the circumstances, you know, especially everybody's been going through a lot over the last year and a half. And, you know, I think we should all be counting our blessings if we're still sitting here and talking and you know, have been able to learn from it all and grow. And I just want to continue to grow. I want to continue to learn. I want to continue to get better, be better. My goal is to, you know, as a whole, make monumental change, not only just personally, but in the world. You know, I want the world to be happy.
All right. Well, I could drop off my son if you want to practice babysitting for your kid.
Yo, man, listen, put me on a phone call 30 minutes and I'll help.
All right, man. Thanks for coming by sure. For the Culture Podcast.
It is what it is, but you can ask anybody from my neighborhood and they'll just tell you that this is just another Bronx tale.